For our scripture reading today, I'm going to invite us to do it together. As you will see, it is very, very short. It's Micah 6:8, which I think is familiar to many of you. But I would invite you, instead of saying he at the beginning, let's say God. Let's use a little more inclusive language, at least for that. So together, God has told you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? But to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God. Today I want to talk about vocation. It's not a word that really shows up that much in the Bible, but the experience certainly does. There are all sorts of well-known stories in the Old Testament and New Testament about people being called by God to do certain things. Our word vocation comes from the Latin vocare, which means to call. It's a word we commonly use to talk about a person's life work or career, or about something that someone is particularly well suited to by their gifts, as in Christopher Morgan Lloyd's vocation is being a pianist. Or it can simply mean a trade or profession. In the religious context, we use vocation to talk about God's call, God having a particular purpose for somebody's life. Some Christians tend to think that only ministers and missionaries and priests or monks and nuns have vocations. Others of us use it much more broadly, believing that all of us as people of faith have gifts from the Spirit, and therefore we all have a calling. Or many callings, to use our gifts to serve God and the world. Discerning our vocation, figuring out what we're meant to do with our lives, is not a one-time thing. It's not just about choosing that major in college or finding a career path. God's call on our lives is something we have to search for again and again. Starting with what classes to take and what extracurricular activities to do when you're in high school, through those young adult choices about major and career. But then it just keeps on going, doesn't it? How many of you have had to make multiple shifts and changes in your vocational journey? Some of you maybe not, but many of us have. Whenever you need to find a new job, or when you're trying to decide what to do outside of your job, or when your children grow up and leave home and things shift, or when you retire, or when your health status changes. The transitions of our lives, or those times when we feel stuck in a place that's no longer giving us life, all are moments that require us to think again about our vocation. We tend to use the term mostly for individuals, but it's not limited to individuals. Groups have vocations. Communities have vocations. As a church, we committed this year to a visioning process together to explore our shared vocation, our calling as a church community at this time in our life as a church. We're not who we were 20 years ago. 10 years ago, who are we being called to be now? What are we being called to do? What is our holy vocation? Arlen Bernava, the consultant that we've been working with, brought with him a conceptual framework, which is illustrated on your cover, thanks to Ann Farrell's efforts. It shows holy vocation at the center, at the place where our deep gladness and the world's deep needs meet. This isn't original to Arlen. It's a concept that comes from Frederick Buechner, who was a Presbyterian minister and writer and theologian. I think it actually may be helpful to hear Buechner's original words. Buechner wrote, "Vocation means the work a person is called to by God. There are all kinds of different voices calling you to all different kinds of work. And the problem is to find out which is the voice of God rather than of society or the superego or self-interest. By and large, he says, a good rule for finding out is this. The kind of work God usually calls you to is the kind of work, A, that you need most to do, and B, that the world most needs to have done. If you really get a kick out of your work, you've probably met requirement A. But if your work is writing TV deodorant commercials, the chances are you might have missed requirement B. On the other hand, if your work is being a doctor in a leper colony, you've probably met requirement B. But if most of the time you're bored and depressed by it, the chances are you not only bypass requirement A, but you probably aren't helping your patients that much either. Neither the hair shirt nor the soft berth will do, Buechner writes. The place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. I find his examples really helpful. The world is full of great needs, but our calling has to be shaped by who we are, by both our gifts and our limits. Our faith tells us that we were each created by God, each of us meant to be exactly who we are. We're not meant to be someone else. We are meant to be ourselves. In fact, I think in essence, the vocation we all share is learning to live fully into who we were made by God to be. So our deep gladness in this sense is not just whatever happens to make us happy in the moment. It's much deeper than that. We may be involved in challenging and difficult work, but if it comes out of who we truly are, then there's an energy that comes from doing the work. There's a sense of fulfillment, of rightness, even when the work is really hard. Deep gladness is about living fully as ourselves and serving out of our gifts. I love Buechner's point that if we bypass the deep gladness part and serve out of a sense of obligation, not only are we miserable, but we probably aren't helping the people we're serving very much either. Life lived out of shoulds and oughts is a fast track to burnout, and it can make other people around you really miserable. We are called to be ourselves, to live into our gifts, and to find ways of serving that line up with our essential natures. In the famous Hasidic tale, Rabbi Zusha put it this way: in the coming world, they will not ask me, why were you not Moses? They will ask me, why were you not Zusha? Or, as the Quaker writer Parker Palmer puts it, is the life I am living the same as the life that wants to live in me? Is the life I'm living the same as the life that wants to live in me? Palmer's book, Let Your Life Speak, Listening for the Voice of Vocation, has become for me a primary source on this topic. Palmer says that our deepest calling is to grow into our own authentic selfhood, whether or not it conforms to some image of who we ought to be. And as we do this, we will not only find the joy that we all seek, we will also find a path of authentic service in the world. Palmer writes that Buechner's definition begins wisely where vocation begins, not in what the world needs, because the world needs everything, but in the nature of the human self, in what brings the self joy. The deep joy of knowing that we are here on earth to be the gifts that God created. And so, our visioning process so far has focused not on the many needs and opportunities all around us, they are many, but with who are we as a church? What are our core values? What makes us who we are? We've been challenged to think not who we want to be or aspire to be, but who are we truthfully and honestly right now? Who are we? That includes our gifts and it includes our limits, our strengths and our weaknesses. We can't be some other church, even though we can learn from them and be inspired by them. Churches, just like individuals, usually fail when they try to copy somebody else. That's why it rarely really works when churches try to adopt those canned programs developed somewhere else. They don't come out of the spirit of the church. They don't reflect the deep gladness of that particular congregation. Churches, like people, as individuals, are called to be ourselves and to believe that the Spirit of God has purposes for us, for who we are, just as we are. Parker Palmer is a teacher, and he tells of an exercise he often does with groups of teachers. He asks them to break up into small groups and take turns sharing two recent moments from their teaching life. A moment when things went so well you knew you were born to be a teacher. And a moment when things went so poorly you kind of wished you'd never been born. Then Palmer asks the small groups to identify the gifts the person used when things went really well. Well, that's fun. That's affirming. Everybody enjoys that part of the exercise. And then he says, actually, that part of what's helpful about that is sometimes our most innate gifts, we don't even recognize that we have. It's so second nature to who we are. But then after this, he asks them to turn it around. Well, then everyone expects that step two is going to be about analyzing when they blew it and talking about what they should have done. But that's not what Palmer asked them to do. He asked the group to help the individual identify how their bad moment was just the shadow of the good one. How the bad moment was the shadow of their giftedness. The time when things went poorly reflected the flip side of their strengths. Do you hear what he's getting at? Our limits, our weaknesses, we might call them, reflect our gifts just as much as our successes. They're just the other side. So for me, for example, I believe I'm really good most of the time at working with group process, letting things evolve over time, working to build consensus, bringing everyone into decisions, and not rushing to get to a conclusion. Most of the time, that's a really great asset as a pastor. But occasionally, when a decision just has to be made and made quickly and decisively, I get really uncomfortable. I don't like having to decide quickly and by myself. My strengths are also my weaknesses. And the more I know that and understand that about myself, the more successfully I can function in both those realms. So I've had a few thoughts about how that might apply to First Baptist. I've talked about this with a few smaller groups. One of our strengths and core values is our closeness and care for each other. This is a warm and open-hearted congregation, a community that nurtures and supports each other, a place of deep sharing and trust, a place where many of us feel we've found family. That's a beautiful and vital aspect of who we are as a church. But the shadow is also true. When conflicts happen and differences emerge, we are more likely to be reactive, to have strong emotional reactions and get our feelings hurt. When our church family life gets messy and painful, all our own actual family dynamics can get caught up in the mix, can't they? Our gift, our closeness, and our intimacy has a shadow side. And we need to be wise enough to recognize that and learn how to work with it. And when we think about what God is calling us to be and do, We need to try to bring the fullness of who we are into our discernment, our gifts and our limits, our strengths and our weaknesses. All are known to God, and God knows what we can best be and do using all of that. The scripture I chose for today was Micah 6:8, because it's a verse that has functioned as sort of a mission statement for this church for a number of years. I asked Linda Coy when and how it was claimed as that, and her memory was, well, not too clear. Sometime during Wendy Fambro's time, she thought, but she didn't really remember any specific process of choosing it. In her memory, it just evolved. If you have more detailed memories, I'd be interested in hearing them. But the point of bringing it up today is that this verse has come to have a central place for this church in defining something about who we are and stating something of our core values. What does God require of you but to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God? We can hear that individualistically in our 21st century minds, but I don't think that's at all the way Micah meant it. These words were meant for individuals, but they were also for the community, because Micah was speaking against false worship and terrible injustice within the people of Israel. He was grieving the failure of the community to do what was right, and he was calling Israel back to faithfulness, calling them to live lives of integrity and wholeness, to live into God's great shalom. The Old Testament prophetic vision of faithfulness was always communal, holistic. The people as a community called to live in right relationship with the earth, with each other, and with God. Love of God and love of neighbor, justice and mercy toward each other, and walking humbly with God, they all are interconnected. They all depend upon each other. It's a short, simple, concise verse, but it's loaded with meaning. So what does it mean to use this verse and ask ourselves, who are we? What does this verse's importance tell us about ourselves? What does it tell us about our values? The point is not some moralistic measurement to judge ourselves against. The importance of this verse, its staying power in our life together, tells us something fundamental about who we are. Justice matters to us. We care deeply and passionately about injustice, and we want to give ourselves to efforts to make things better, to make things more right, more fair. Mercy and kindness are essential to us, to our life together as a community, and to the way we want to respond to people around us. And all of us, each in our own way and in community with each other, are seeking to walk with God, to live connected to the holy, to make the inward and outward journeys of our lives in relationship with the love and goodness of God's Spirit. These words help define our life together, the values that shape who we are. So, in this September of 2019, as we move forward in this visioning, in this discerning for ourselves as a community, and in whatever is going on in our individual lives, some truths to hold on to. We all have gifts. We are all needed. None of us here by chance. We are all important. Each of us has the light of God within us that needs to shine. Each of us have a calling to show forth God's love in our own unique way. And as First Baptists, we have so many gifts, so many resources, so much love to share. God has great purposes for us. Let us recommit ourselves to prayer, discernment, to seeking God's way, and to be willing to say yes to whatever it is we find ourselves being led into. Because, of course, to go back to that very first calling story, Abraham and Sarah had no idea where they were going. That's the archetypal story of faith. Faith is always stepping out into the unknown. Faith is always moving forward, not knowing where you're going, but knowing who you're going with. We're going with God, and we go with each other. Let's go forward with great faith, hope, and love.